Let's take a trip down memory lane. It's time for Niagara County's Great History Show.
Indeed it is. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, November 8th, 2023, and I am so pleased to say that I am joined in studio with the Great History Show of Niagara County with the new executive director, Becky Pittler. Good morning, Miss Becky. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Good morning to you, Eric.
I'm so glad that you could take time to visit us this morning, and I know that our listeners really, really enjoy this these segments when we have the History Center on, and so we're going to ask our listeners, once we get starting on our topic, to give us a call and join the conversation. That's the most funnerest part. It's the most funnerest part of the show is your calls and you're sharing your memories with us. And today we're going to be talking about Christmas traditions as we get going on after we speak about some of the great events that are going to be happening at the History Center. I believe it is at 215 Niagara Street, if my memory serves me correctly.
That's correct.
And the number of the History Center, if you need to call them for any reason, is 434-7433. So somehow I have all those numbers embedded in my brain. I don't know how that happens. It could have something to do with the hometown happenings we do every morning here, because you always have something exciting going on at the History Center. No question about that. So without further ado, Becky, I'm going to let you take the mic and talk about some of the great events that you have coming up at the History Center.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for having us on the radio again this morning. We're very excited to let you know about all the things that we have going on at the Niagara History Center. It's that time of year to renew your membership, if to the Niagara History Center, or if you're not a member, to consider joining. Our members receive a bi-monthly newsletter and enjoy unlimited free admission to all of our three sites. And we offer interesting and educational programs throughout the year. So consider joining the Niagara History Center if you're not already a member. And if you are a member, please renew your membership. We also offer business memberships. So if you're a business in Niagara County, we would appreciate you joining as a business member and help support us. And also start thinking about your holiday shopping. Consider our gift shops. We have a gift shop located at our main site at 215 Niagara Street in Lockport. And we also have a gift shop at our Erie Canal Discovery Center at 24 Church Street in Lockport. And if you're a member, you receive a 10% discount on gift shop purchases. So come out and check out our items that we have for sale. We have a variety of historic items and books and publications. So it's a great thing to give as a Christmas gift. So remember that our members receive 10% discount on gift shop purchases. So come out and see us.
So wouldn't a membership be a great Christmas present as well?
Yes.
Just buy someone you love a membership, because they got stuff.
Right.
Everybody has enough stuff. But this, you know, this is a gift that's affordable and it lasts all year long. So
right, and they get a along with their membership, they also get our newsletter and about all the events that are happening around town too.
Very good.
We appreciate all the support from our members and the community on our annual fund drive, and that continues through the end of the year. We realize that everybody's household costs have increased greatly over the past year, as our operating costs have already gone up. And all of the monetary donations received are even more important than ever to sustaining our collections, maintaining our seven buildings that are located in three locations, and offering research and educational services and continuing our long history of service to the community. If you want to contribute to our annual fund drive, you can always send us a check. It can be made out to the Niagara History Center and sent to 215 Niagara Street in Lockport, New York at 14094. And please just write annual fund drive on the memo line. Again, our address is 215 Niagara Street. And for other forms of donations, you can contact the History Center at 716-434-7433. We're also in need of volunteers, some more volunteers. So if you think you might be interested in donating some of your time, a couple hours a week or even monthly, you can please call the History Center for more information. We have a variety of volunteer opportunities available, so check us out. One of our volunteer opportunities would be to share the background of some of Niagara County's historical figures. The Step Back in Time players are looking for you to join their group of reenactors. And it's a dedicated group of reenactors who volunteer their time to share their knowledge of some local historical figures with presentations in our local cemeteries, for community groups, senior residential communities, and area historical societies. So if you're interested in any of these volunteer activities, or interested in finding out more about the opportunities we have available, please again call us at 716-434-7433, and we'd be more than happy to talk to you. We're also trying to add to some of our collections of photographs. So if you have any old pictures of local buildings or pictures inside of a local business, we would appreciate it if you would share them with us. These pictures do not have to be donated to the Niagara History Center, but if you want to keep the photographs, but we would appreciate it if we could scan them for our collection files. So our local buildings and businesses will live on in our history, even if they no longer exist. And our next event we're very excited to tell you about is our annual event, a Winter's Fest Eve. It's fast approaching. It's less than a month away. And you don't want to miss this event, which puts everyone in the holiday spirit and make it an annual tradition for you and your family. A Winter's Fest Eve will be held on December 7th, the first Thursday of December, at the historic Colonel William Bond Jesse Hawley House at 143 Ontario Street in Lockport, in the evening starting at 6 and ending at 8 p.m. This 200-year-old home will be fully decorated for the holidays, and guided tours will be offered. Come and enjoy the musical sounds of the group Another Time, and let this event put you into the holiday spirit. Going along with this next event, I thought it'd be fun today to talk about some of the Christmas traditions you might see on display at the historic Colonel William Bond Jesse Hawley House and share some memories. So please call in and share some of your Christmas traditions or Christmas memories. So I thought I'd start with, when did Christmas start in America? The first known Christmas celebration in America was thought to be at Jamestown Colony in Virginia in 1607. So that goes pretty far. But it's interesting to note that from that first celebration, it took over 200 years for Christmas to become a holiday. It was not until 1836 that the first state, Alabama, established Christmas as a legal holiday. And it took until 1890 before the last state to establish Christmas as a legal holiday happened, and that was Oklahoma. It means it took 54 years for all of the states at that time in the United States to recognize Christmas as a legal holiday. So that really wasn't that long ago. Most people decorate a Christmas tree in their house during the holidays, but where did that tradition come from? Anybody got any ideas where the birthplace of the decorated tree came from?
Germany.
Yep, you're right, Germany. And do you know who brought it, brought the tradition or sort of established the tradition that it spread to the United States?
Probably the Dutch.
Nope, it was actually Prince Albert. He was Queen Victoria's husband.
Oh.
And he was from Germany, and he brought his ideas of decorated Christmas trees to England with him when he married Queen Victoria. And in 1841, pictures of trees set up at Windsor Castle for the English royalty for their children were published in all the popular ladies' magazines, which helped spread the tradition of a decorated Christmas tree across America.
Isn't that something? So German Christmas trees been burning houses down since 18...
yeah, since the early 1800s,
yes.
Right?
Very good.
So we all know that there's a lot of ladies' magazines in or magazines in publication today, but there was a lot back then, too, and they really did help spread the word about the decorated Christmas tree, and people wanted to celebrate like the English royalty, like Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. So it spread quickly across America. And traditionally in the Victorian times, Christmas trees were usually tabletop trees. They were shorter trees put on a table. And it wasn't until the late 1800s that floor-to-ceiling trees began to outnumber the once popular tabletop trees of earlier decades. And also in Victorian times, trees were getting much more lavishly decorated and crowded with ornaments. They put everything that they could think of on their Christmas trees. Do you have a favorite memory about an ornament or ornaments in your that were handed down from generation to generation? Most people have ornaments that were passed on from family member to family member, and they don't always get on the Christmas tree every year, but they keep them in their collection. Most of the early decorations on a Christmas tree were edible, so they were ornaments such as fruit, nuts, or cookies. Often a variety of fruit was used to decorate the greens at the holiday season. So most traditionally there was apples, pears, lemons, and grapes. And grapes were a symbol of friendship, so they were used often on Christmas trees. And other than natural decorations, most ornaments before the Civil War were handmade.
Nice.
So people were making decorations at home.
Well, decorations is a good segue into, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a favorite Christmas decoration from your childhood or bringing up, you can share them with us at 433-1433. And for those of you who are just now joining us, I am pleased to have in studio Becky Pittler, who is the new executive director of the Niagara County History Center. And she has been doing her homework for how many years? 40 years now?
Close to it, yeah.
Close to 40 years you've been affiliated with the History Center. And so it's really nice that someone as qualified as yourself has become the executive director. We're certainly a very fortunate community to have you here. So again, join the conversation at 433-1433. We'll be right back after this station identification.
County's Information Station. Information Station.
Very good. And now you were talking about the edible decorations. Now, do you know when the string and the popcorn came along on these things?
Well, it's been popular for a long time. I don't know exactly when popcorn became popular as stringing decorations. It was used in the 1800s along with stringing cranberries.
Oh,
But it became a lot more popular when you talk about like the 1950s and things like that, where mm-hmm. it came back, where people strung popcorn or popcorn and cranberries. Yeah, does anybody have any memories out there of stringing popcorn? It's not an easy thing to do.
It's not, because they fall apart, but you get to eat the mistakes.
Yes, you get to eat the mistakes, but it takes a long time to string popcorn because they fall off as soon as you're stringing them, too.
That's right. What brings that to mind is I'm filling my face with popcorn this morning that young Ayla was kind enough to bring into the studio. Her mom makes a delicious sweet popcorn. And so thanks to Ayla's mom for that. And back to Christmas tree decorations. 433-1433. We'd love to have you join the conversation.
We also, they also made decorations out of natural materials. So corn husks were popular and served as a reminder of all the bounty and blessings bestowed by nature upon us. So a lot of people, probably in the 70s, corn husk dolls were really regained popularity. So sometimes people decorated their trees with corn husk dolls, or they just had them around for decorations. But they also used corn husk way back. They used the corn husk just plain to put on their greens, or they created them into decorations to hang on the Christmas tree. Pine cones were another natural decoration that were widely used, as they're abundantly available in wintertime. We know they come from evergreens, and evergreens are the everlasting tree through winter, so that's why they're considered the best tree for a Christmas tree. And molds for pine cone ornaments were among the earliest developed by European glassblowers to reproduce, because people used pine cones so widely before we had actual glass ornaments. Does anybody know where blown glass ornaments originally came from?
Corning?
Nope.
Gosh darn dang neb found it all.
They actually came from Eastern Germany. Most of our decorations came from Germany. And they were known, the first ones were known as kugels. And some of these were so large, they were hung from the ceiling and not placed on a tree. They were originally started out as window decorations. They were large glass blown balls. And then they were hung on Christmas trees later on if you had a big enough Christmas tree that could support the weight of them. And then as time went on, these kugels developed into the round Christmas balls ornaments that we know now, or were the glass blowers blew ornaments into shapes. So by the mid-1800s, artisans in Germany developed techniques to hand-blow glass into molds to create the glass ornaments we know today. But these were often too fragile to travel across the ocean when most of the immigrant families came from Germany to the United States, so the ornaments stayed behind. But the traditions came along with those German settlers, and then in America, they decided that they would share their German traditions and share their techniques, and America started having manufacturers that were making glass-blown ornaments in the 1880s. And then glass-blown ornaments took hold in the United States, and they're still very popular today, and there are still many companies that make glass-blown ornaments today that are marketed in the United States. Mass production of American ornaments really took off after World War II in the post-war years from the 1940s to the 1950s, and we had what were called shiny bright ornaments. And a lot of people bought shiny bright ornaments in the post-war years. And they had a little bit of a more of a metallic finish on them so that they would glisten a little bit more on the trees. And a lot of families have the tradition of glass bird ornaments on their tree. And they were often handed down from generation to generation because they were some of the most difficult ornaments to make for glass blowers. So if you got a glass bird ornament, you kept it from year to year and handed it down from generation to generation. And birds were made as an ornament because they're considered a symbol of happiness and joy. And I don't know if there's anybody out there, but in the old days, we also put birds' nests on the Christmas tree, as it was said to bring good luck to the family and are a symbol of home. So a lot of people put a bird's nest on their tree. Metal ornaments were often popular, and they were made of lead, tin, pewter, or brass, and they were popular between 1870 and 1900. So you often see some metal, sort of like tinsel on the tree, but they were metal ornaments shaped in spindle shapes and teardrop shapes, and they were very popular to put on your tree. They also reflected the candlelight. Another thing that people did as a pastime was to collect scraps. And they were often used, they collected them and pasted them into albums and had scrapbooks. That's where the term scrapbook comes from. And they were often used to make ornaments from the 1800s until well into the early 1900s. And they were, scraps were colorful pictures, and they were either sold as a sheet commercially or you could cut them out from advertisements from magazines or by cutting up seed catalogs or cutting up fruit crate labels. So they were like a really a popular pastime. Like I said, that's where scrapbooks came from because people would cut up these scraps and paste them into books, and that was where scrapbooks came from. But they could also make them into ornaments, and they made beautiful paper ornaments to put on a tree. So you would cut them out and shape them into ornaments. Sometimes you would paste them onto other paper and then put a string through them to hang them on the tree. They're very detailed. Like, a lot of people use their seed catalogs. The old seed catalogs were beautiful in their day. They had a lot of farm scenes in them. They had even the seed packets that they advertised for marketing were colorful in the seed catalog, so you could cut those up and make them into scraps. And like I said, fruit crate labels were very detailed and beautiful in their day. On the wooden fruit crates, the labels were very colorful, so you could cut those up and turn them into scraps. That was really popular. We already talked about popcorn, and that was another thing that we said was very popular, string on your tree. Were you ever in charge of putting the tinsel on your tree and all the mess that the tinsel made? lots of people put tinsel on their tree.
Only once.
Yeah. A lot of people do the throw on the tree method too, where you just take the tinsel and throw it on the tree and see where it lands. Tinsel actually goes way back. It first appeared in the 16th century. And does anybody know what it was originally used for?
To scare away the birds.
No, it was actually used as decorations on military uniforms. And later on, it became popular Christmas tree decoration. And what do you think it was originally made out of?
boy. Let's see. Military uniforms. Brass?
You're close. Silver.
Silver.
It was made out of shredded silver. And then, because what does silver do?
Tarnishes.
Yes. So then they decided they didn't like that idea because once you made it out of the silver, the shredded silver, it tarnished and they didn't like the way it looked on the tree. So then they decided to make it out of lead.
Oh, good idea.
Because lead does not tarnish.
However, and it tastes good.
That's a good point. Lead tinsel was later banned in the 1960s for fear of lead poisoning. So it was made until the 1960s out of lead. And the idea of the tinsel on the tree was used to reflect the light of candles and later the glow of the electric Christmas tree lights. So most people have memories of tinsel because it was real popular. It was really popular in the 50s and 60s to put on trees. And it's still popular today and it's still sold today.
And you can still find them under your couch from the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, you can. And today's made out of actually recycled plastic. So that's what they make tinsel out of today.
Very good.
Did anybody ever have the tradition in their family of the pickle ornament? And some people still carry it on today. We'd like to hear from you if you have ever had this tradition in your home and your traditions at Christmas. According to German tradition, the pickle brings good luck. So the pickle ornament is the last ornament to be hung on the Christmas tree after all the kids go to bed. The ornament's hidden within the tree's branches, and on Christmas morning, the first child to find the pickle ornament on the tree that's hidden on the tree gets an extra special gift from St. Nicholas or Santa Claus. Were you ever that lucky sibling who found the pickle ornament on the tree? It's still a tradition carried on in some homes today. It was, like I said, a German tradition that started, and they still pickle ornaments are sold widely today from the American ornament companies that we have today. Ever think about how ornaments were hung on a tree? What do we use today? Ornament hooks, right? The first ornament hooks were introduced in 1892, so that's pretty late. So prior to that invention, ornaments were tied to the tree. So you have to think about all the string that you would have to put through ornaments and tie it to the tree. And also, when you're taking off the ornaments from the live Christmas tree, it took a little longer to untie all of them. It's a little easier to unhook them today. And ornament hooks changed over time, but most of the time they were in the same similar shape. They might have had a little few kinks to them. Sometimes they were circular, had a hook and then circular to hold the ornaments on. That was some of the older ornament hooks looked like. And they were available. They're pretty cheap and they're still pretty cheap today. They were cheap in the old days all through like the 1900s. They were like 25 cents, 10 cents to buy a box of 100. They're still pretty reasonable today. You can still get like 100 hooks for a dollar or so. And what was your tree topper growing up, or what's your tradition of your tree topper now? An angel, a star, or another ornament? Angels were a popular tree topper, and they're symbols of purity, peace, and love. Stars on the tree are an interesting tree topper. They're a symbol of guidance and faith. They also symbolize the hope for peace and good fortune. And the other thing we don't really think about a star, we look at the stars in the sky and we think about that they're all through the universe, those stars. So a star on your tree as a tree topper demonstrates the fact that people, regardless of their nationality, share the same universe. So that's another tradition of the star on the Christmas tree. And did you help to cut down the Christmas tree or take a family outing to the tree lot, or wasn't it an artificial tree for you? What do people do today? Do they have real trees or do they have mostly artificial trees? And when do we think the first artificial tree appeared? And what was it made out of? We didn't have plastic in the late 1800s, so what do we think artificial trees were made out of in the late 1800s? They were made out of real bird feathers, usually turkey or goose. And sometimes these feather trees were left white, and sometimes they were dyed. These trees range in size from 2 inches to over 10 feet. So if you're thinking, if you're creating an artificial tree out of turkey feathers or goose feathers, to make it over 10 feet, you had to have a lot of...
That's a lot of feathers.
That's a lot of feathers.
It sure is. And I can't imagine, doesn't lice and things as such live in feathers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't imagine that being the healthiest thing.
No,
and
but...
the dander, you have to breathe in.
Feather trees still exist to this day, and they're really collectible. And when we're talking about them being over 10 feet tall, too, you got to remember that the artificial feather... Well, the feather trees that we know are not like the artificial trees we have today. They're not real packed.
Mm-hmm.
What they did is they lined up the feathers in a row, and so you would have a smaller row toward the top, and then the rows got a little bit bigger as you came down, but they left a lot of space between the branches of a feather tree. And do we know why they left that space?
To put stuff in.
Well, yes, stuff. One of those things that you would stuff in those spaces were candles. So it made it a little bit safer to have candles on your tree. Because it allowed for the safer use of candles. You weren't burning your branches.
No, you burned feathers instead.
Yes. Well, there was a pretty good space amount. And you remember the candles they used on the Christmas trees were a little smaller because they had to make those candles, too, to put on those Christmas trees.
Right.
So, and if you wanted a lot on them, you made them a little smaller than a typical taper of today. Now, in the 1930s, a U.S.-based company created the first artificial tree made from brush bristles. So if we think about the going back like to the 1930s, the trees didn't look like, they looked more like they were bottle brush trees. They looked like more like brush bristles. So the branches would have been looked like brush bristles. And they were very popular in the 1930s, like we said, the first artificial trees. And those were artificial trees that we used for a long time. And then as we got after the war years, we got into using some more plastic, and vinyl was produced for World War II. So after World War II, we could use that substance for other things, and that's where we see some of the more modern-looking artificial trees come out after World War II. And does anybody remember what the trees were popular in the 1960s? Actually, they were developed in 1958 by a U.S. company. They were silver in color, and they were called aluminum trees.
I remember those.
Yep, they were the silvery-like tree, and they were first produced in Chicago in 1958. Their popularity of these aluminum Christmas trees prompted the Christmas light manufacturers to invent a multicolored rotating floodlights to enhance their appeal. Because it was really hard to put Christmas lights on those trees. They were sharp. And they would cut your fingers, and they would also, some of those first aluminum trees were really sharp. They would cut the electric light cords.
Oh, dear.
So a lot of those trees were sold with this rotating disc, and I've seen one. It just is a round disc, and it has like a, it almost looks like a pizza, and one of it is green. One piece is red, one piece is gold, one piece is blue, and it rotated on a regular light bulb.
Yep.
So it just showed, like, 1 minute the tree would be green, the next minute it would be red, and it would just rotate around.
And then disco was born.
Yes. That's what it reminds you of, a disco ball. So you had these silver trees, so we didn't really go back to the, we had to create some new ornaments for these trees because they were aluminum and a lot of the old glass bulbs were silver based in color with a little extra color added to them. So they didn't really look good on these aluminum trees. So, manufacturers got busy and they started making the solid color ornaments. Those were typically used. So you would see a lot of solid color balls. That's where more solid color balls came into existence in the 1960s. And also, I don't know if people remember these, but I remember them. They were rayon thread wrapped ornaments. They became the rage in the 1960s. They were styrofoam balls wrapped with rayon thread. And when you were hanging them on the tree or taking them off, sometimes it was, you could see the threads just started to unravel, and you would have to get rid of a couple of those ornaments every year because the threads would just unravel. And when we're talking about artificial trees, and I ask whether it's more popular to have a real tree now or an artificial tree, today it's said that almost 60% of the population has an artificial Christmas tree. So that means only about 40% have a real Christmas tree anymore. People like not having all the work of picking up all those needles at the end of the season.
You know, it's funny. Nobody has called yet, but several people have texted me this morning, and they say that they alternate every year, every other year, between a real one and an artificial tree. The reason being, his wife found a spider's nest in the real tree.
Oh.
a couple years ago, and she was not pleased. So they had to come to some sort of agreement as far as real versus fake trees.
Well, you know what? A spider's considered a lucky thing on a tree.
Tell her that.
Yeah. It is. It is when you go back in the old days.
Was
spiders
it?
Considered to be lucky on a tree. Yes.
Okay.
Bring you luck.
Yeah, they also said that an aluminum tree was the card holding tree when they were growing up. There were cards in it.
Yes.
Because it was, you know, firm and...
Firm, and you could put your Christmas cards that you got on it. Yep.
Yep, so we got some nice feedback here. But you can feedback by calling us, if you like, folks, at 433-1433. We would love to have you join the conversation here in WLVL 1340 AM, streaming worldwide at WLVL.com. And also, don't forget, if you missed any of this great programming with the History Center, you can always go to WLVL.com, hit the podcast button, choose your show, choose your date. It goes back for eons, at least. And of course, once again, we are so pleased to have Becky Pittler, who is the Executive Director of the Niagara County History Center, in studio with us talking about Christmas and Christmas traditions, because you know that Christmas is right around the corner. And just in the event that you missed the first part of the program, it is that time of year where you renew your membership for the History Center. And if you're looking for that hard-to-find gift for someone, buy them a gift of history. Give them a membership to the History Center. It's a wonderful gift. It doesn't involve stuff. It involves a process. It involves learning. It involves having a great time. And it lasts all year long. We have a caller. Good morning, caller. How are you this morning?
Very good. I wanted to share a Christmas tradition from our household when I was a kid. And this was, I don't know if it was really something that they did as a tradition. It was more out of necessity. We had a lot of kids in our family, and there was always a lot of little ones. And what we used to do, my parents did, was they would take the Christmas tree, and they would put it inside of the playpen. We had one of those old wooden playpens, or I don't know if you call them crib or playpen. But if you look at pictures from our early 50s or middle 50s to late 60s, our Christmas tree was always inside this playpen because the kids would be trying to climb on it and everything. So this kept it out of their way.
And, you know, that's an old tradition, too. Christmas trees in the Victorian times often had fencing around them. So your playpen is just like the fencing, and it's a great idea.
Yeah, it worked because you didn't want between the kids and the cats and the dogs, you didn't want them on the tree.
Right. That's a great idea for somebody who has animals, too, to put it in a wooden playpen.
Oh,
of course,
boy.
They're outlawed now. So.
I just thought I'd share that with you.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, see you later.
All right.
Bye.
Good morning, caller. Uh-oh. Is she still with me? Oh, we lost the caller. Call back again. We had a second caller, and somehow we lost her. But please feel free to call back at 433-1433. Yeah, Happy Tales and Climbing Kitties.
Yep.
Kind of made the end of Christmas trees at our house permanent.
Yeah.
So Mrs. Eric puts up lights on the wall in the shape of a Christmas tree.
Good idea.
That keeps us all safe from the consequences of Happy Tales.
Yeah, I know. They can knock over a Christmas tree.
Bad kitties.
So we'll talk a little bit about some national Christmas trees, too. The United States National Christmas Tree has been lit every year since 1923 on the South Lawn of the White House. And the tree at Rockefeller Center in New York City has been a national tradition since 1933. So those have been longstanding traditions in the United States. And, you know, do you have any stories about have you ever wondered how the Christmas tree lights could get so tangled from year to year? And were you the one in charge of finding the one bulb that was out so the whole strand of lights would work? That's always a tradition in most homes.
That is the original cause of the nightmare before Christmas.
Yeah. So pre-electricity, we used candles on the Christmas trees. And We talked about putting candles on the feather trees. So candle holders weren't patented until 1867. So before that, what they used to do is melt a little bit of the candle wax onto the tree branch and stick the candle in it to try to try to make sure that it would stand up. It didn't always work.
What a great idea. Or not.
Yeah. In 1867, a counterbalance candle holder, which is it was a long wire with a weight on the bottom of it, was patented to help hold the candles upright on the Christmas tree. And then they improved on that in 1888 when they made a balancing candle holder. They were weighted down at the bottom. We usually colored balls on the end of the wire, so it helped hold the candle upright. And then later on, we had clip candle holders. They were invented. Now, trees decorated with hand-dipped candles were only lit for a very short time, less than 15 minutes, and the family stood close by to put out any fires that might occur. So while you were standing there, usually you only lit your Christmas tree on Christmas Eve for about 15 minutes or less. You had often water-soaked rags, a bucket of sand, or a bucket of water was kept near the tree, just in case anything started on fire. And we know that when candles are used, especially old candles, we don't have dripless candles in the old days, they tended to drip wax on the carpets or the wooden floors. So that's where our Christmas tree skirt comes from. So some families use sheets, fabrics, or batting under the tree to catch these drippings, but others purchased elaborately decorated, and they were called commercial tree carpets in the old days. And they were actually rather large. Later on, as we developed more things to hold the candles so they wouldn't drip as much, these tree carpets became smaller and became known as tree skirts. And so most people use a tree skirt under their Christmas tree, and some of those have been passed down from generation to generation. So now we go from candles to what? Electricity, right? So the first time that there was this big event, the first time in a Christmas tree was lit by electric lights was in 1882. So that's pretty early. It happened in New York, and it was the first Christmas tree illuminated by electric lights. And it was by Edward Johnson, who was a friend of the famous inventor Thomas Edison, and he was responsible for this innovative display. Of course, electricity was really cost prohibitive to most people back then. And so it was just a display of lights. It was originally, they were all hand-wired strings of red, white, and blue lights, which is still some of the favorite traditions today of decorating a Christmas tree. This milestone paved the way for the creation of the first string of Christmas lights, which was made available for sale around 1890. But initially, the cost of these electric lights were so prohibitive, they were so expensive for most people, with a set of 24 lights priced at $12, which would be equivalent to around $80 today, just to get 24 lights. So the first really commercially produced electric lights for the Christmas trees appeared in 1901, but they were still too expensive for the average person. So it took about until 1930 for the use of electric lights on Christmas trees to take hold. So that was a long time, about 30 years before the cost came down and more people could afford to use electric lights on their tree. However, a brilliant idea emerged: renting Christmas lights for your Christmas tree. And General Electric produced the first set of Christmas lights for rent in 1903, making them more accessible to a broader audience. And these lights came in 7 colors. You could get clear, frosted, green, blue, purple, ruby, or opal. So you could rent your Christmas lights starting in 1903. That was pretty good for General Electric to make money. And you could afford to put them on your tree and then return them after Christmas.
What a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it was a great idea. Mm-hmm. And many people might remember where there was those old mirror-like foil pans that were placed behind the light bulbs and electric lights to catch the reflection of the lights. Mm-hmm. A lot of people used those. They were real popular from the 1920s on. And do you drive around today during the holidays to see outdoor lighting displays? That tradition became a tradition of outdoor light displays became a tradition in North America. And it was made possible by the development of safe outdoor Christmas light bulbs and light strings as early as 1927. In the 1930s, we started to have novelty lights started to emerge, spreading holiday cheer and boosting light sales during the Great Depression. This era saw the introduction of snowman lights, icicle lights, and various other holiday theme lighting representations. But so in 1930s, we decided to do outside lights. Then what happened? World War II came along, and during the history of World War II, the early 1940s, the War Production Board asked that we not put any outdoor display lights on. So it kind of faded out for a little while until after World War II. After World War II, too, we also had bubble Christmas lights gain immense popularity. And people remember those, I'm sure, have memories of the bubble lights. They contained a liquid that would bubble and create a tinkling noise as the chemicals inside boiled. They became a big sensation in the late 1940s, and they continued to be used into the 1970s, with many still in operation today. And you can buy reproduction bubble lights today, but a lot of people have memories of watching the bubble lights on their tree. Today, people have elaborate lights on the inside and the outside of their homes, so it's fun to drive around and look at all those displays. How about, what did you put the Christmas tree in? In earlier times, they put them in wash tubs, buckets, barrels, anything they could think of. But do you have a Christmas tree stand that was passed down from generation to generation? Some people do. Cast iron tree stands were first patented in 1876, and the cast iron was used to steady the weight of the tree. And it's interesting to note that tree stands have been three-legged since their invention. So you still see tree stands today that only have three legs. And many of the old tree stands also had water wells for fresh-cut trees. How much of your house do you decorate? In the Victorian era, every room in the house was decorated. Garland ropes called wreathing was typically draped on staircases, mantels, over doorways, over picture frames, mirrors. Anything that had a surface, you decorated.
Neat. Hey, we have a call. Good morning, caller. What is your recollection, memory, or comments about Christmas?
You know, if we can go back to the shiny Christmas tree for just a second. If you remember in the Charlie Brown Christmas special, there was a reference to those. There were these metal trees, and they knocked down the tree, and it sounded like a stop sign post.
Yep. It did. That's right.
Yep. The shiny Christmas
and,
trees.
I knew two people in town that had those. They didn't just have the color wheel. Their tree was on a turntable, so the tree itself rotated.
Wow.
Fancy schmancy.
Well, it was a big time.
It sure was. Holy smokes, that's like, boy, that's like the affluent section of town there, huh, John?
It might have just been an old record player. I don't know.
Well, that would be a good idea, too. Yeah.
33 and a third.
Zoom, zoom, zoom.
I haven't put a Christmas tree up in probably 10, 15 years.
Well, it's about time you do it again,
John. Just got tired of dragging the boxes out and then stashing them away for a month and putting the stuff back away. It just got to be too much.
Well, time to get back in the Christmas spirit and drag all that stuff out again, because that's what Christmas is all about.
Or buy a pre-decorated little tree and put it out.
Something.
Yeah, get back in the Christmas spirit. That's what we're going to do, by golly.
Well, thanks for calling and sharing your memories.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, John. You know, it's funny, another caller, a text came in. He said he would have called, but he's at work, and he can't leave his workstation. He said when he was a very young man, his older brother would bring him a dog biscuit and say, Santa left this on the plate, so he gets the leftover what Santa didn't eat. And I'll be
he
a
gets
son
the
of a
leftover,
gun.
Right?
Yeah, I'll be a son of a gun if he didn't eat it, thinking it was a treat from Santa Claus. Oh, the games we play.
That's for sure.
Siblings. Well, folks, you still got a few minutes to get through at 433-1433 if you would like to share your Christmas memories. And again, we're thanking Becky Pittler for coming in this morning from the Niagara County History Center. And again, once again, for your Christmas gifts, it'd be nice to have a membership to the Niagara County History Center. It's affordable and it lasts all year long. So where do we leave off there, Miss Becky?
Well, let's talk about writing your list to Santa and giving him your gift list and seeing what you get on it, right? So prior to the Victorian era, gifts were given on New Year's Day, mostly to business associates to thank them for their past business and wishing them New Year's wishes for continuous business arrangements. The giving of Christmas presents to family and friends was also established in the Victorian era. But it's interesting to note that in those times, most gifts weren't even wrapped. They were placed directly on the tree as a decoration or underneath the tree to be distributed on Christmas morning. And let's hope that dad of the family got all his instructions from mom as to who got what gift, because you didn't want him pulling off a doll off the tree and handing it to the little boy. So dad would decide in the morning, on Christmas morning, who got what gift. So if they weren't if they were unwrapped and used as decorations on the tree, he took them off. Or if they were under the tree unwrapped, he distributed those also. The 1950s saw an increase in store-bought gifts, as prior to that, most gifts were handmade. And we know that the biggest gift-buying season starts officially on Black Friday. Does anybody know why we call it Black Friday?
Ooh, Mr. Carter. Because it's the one day of the year the businesses aren't in the red.
That's right. They go back into the black financially.
That's right. You get back into the black and hope that sales from then until Christmas are enough to get you through the year.
Right. That's right.
Being a former business owner, I am quite familiar with the black and the red ink. Yes.
And what about Santa Claus?
Coca-Cola.
What is our tradition of Santa Claus?
Do I win?
So the concept of the American Santa Claus originated with St. Nicholas, who was sainted for being a kind and generous man. He was born in Asia Minor thousands of years ago. And actually, in honor of St. Nicholas, December 6th became the traditional day in Europe for the exchange of Christmas gifts and the beginning of the holiday season. Dutch immigrants to the United States brought their version of St. Nicholas, called Sinterklaas. Americans unaccustomed to the Dutch pronunciation turned this into the Santa Claus that we know today, and the rest is history. Prior to 1809, Santa didn't travel in a sleigh. He came by donkey or a horseback, and he didn't have a sleigh full of toys. So Santa kind of gets his sleigh in the 1809 Washington Irving's Knickerbocker History of New York. And it changes the image from St. Nicholas into Jolly St. Nick.
Isn't that something? Well, what a glorious day this has been. Thank you so much for sharing all this history with us. We sure do appreciate you, Becky. And we're going to look forward to seeing you again another month or so.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue the Niagara County History Center program here on WLVL 1340 AM, streaming worldwide at WLVL.com. I hope you have a glorious day. And if we don't see you again, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yep. Come out and see us at the Bond House.